Blaine Mitchell Show podcast presents another live Sonic Session performance.
Joining us in the Booster Juice Listener Lounge, Tegan and Sarah, everyone.
In our bed, repeat the words that I know we both said. Relax into the need, we get so comfortable. Remember when I was so strange and like a bow.
Everybody, Tegan and Sarah. Yeah, I can tell. Whatever. No big deal. One thing you guys are probably getting asked a whole bunch of is, the new album. It's a little bit poppier. My question is, was that a conscious decision? Did you guys sit down and have that conversation?
You know, before every record, we always have a conversation about, you know, where we want to go and what we haven't done before and how to keep ourselves entertained. But a big part of it is how to keep our audience happy. And although Sainthood was really exciting and it was a really amazing record for us and it took us so many new places and we gained so many new fans, it didn't necessarily have a single on it. It didn't sell nearly as much as The Con. And so we didn't think to ourselves, everything's perfect. Let's just keep doing what we've been doing. We actually did sit down and rethink out what the whole premise of Tegan and Sarah is, what the whole point of what we do is. And it seems that at its core, the thing that keeps Tegan and Sarah fans coming back and especially buying concert tickets is the stories and the emotion behind the music. And so our number one, goal for Heartthrob was to make the most vulnerable, emotionally intense record that we've ever made. And I think we accomplished that. But we also thought, well, we've done indie rock and we've done more rock stuff. And one of the things that we'd been exploring the last 6 years was sort of our dance pop influences. So we decided that we would try making a record that reflected a lot more of the music we grew up listening to, like Cyndi Lauper and early Madonna and New Order. And so we headed out into the world to try to find a producer who would help us do that with class. But we still wanted to explore that. So
I sort of feel like Heartthrob is a victory on a couple of fronts. You know, one, like you say, it's a really vulnerable record, but also this is what, album number 7 for you guys?
700, yeah.
Yeah, you guys have, you know, all these sort of alt records out. You have radio support from alt stations, and then you release an album that's a totally sort of different genre. Do you feel like you're starting all over again with Heartthrob?
Thankfully, it doesn't necessarily feel like we're starting over, but it does feel like, you know, different doors are opening for us. And certainly the exposure for the record has been so much higher, you know, just in terms of like the, like you said, the radio stations that are playing us. All of a sudden, we're not sort of relegated to just one type of radio station. We're seeing the song played on alternative radio stations, even like college radio stations, pop stations, places that we haven't necessarily been exposed before. And in our mind, you know, like any opportunity to sort of introduce the band to a new audience is good. The honest to God truth, and I don't know if I should say this, but like I don't listen to a lot of radio. We're traveling all the time, so I'm not like in one place saying like, oh, I'm loyal to this brand or I'm loyal to this station or this DJ or whatever. So for us, you know, to be able to say like, hey, we're not snobs. If the music is getting played, if we're no, like to me it's like it's less important, you know, where this music fits, and more important to me that the music is just getting heard.
Well, to a lot of Tegan and Sarah fans, Poppy record seems like a necessary step in the evolution. The collaboration with David Guetta, for instance, you know, was that sort of a way of, you know, dipping your toe in Lake Pop and seeing how it felt?
Well, growing up in Alberta, I mean, the punk music scene and the rock music scene was big, but there was also a huge electronic music scene, you know, especially in the 90s. We would literally go and see, like, you know, a Smashing Pumpkins concert, but then go to a rave the next weekend. So I think we've always had a lot of our interests have sort of been in electronic and pop music. So, but I do think that the last 6 years, a lot of the collaborations we were doing did lead us down this path, and it made us feel like, A, we were gaining a lot of fans from the collaborative work we were doing, starting with Tiësto, but then with Morgan Page and David Guetta. But we also were seeing a lot more collaboration between Sarah and I. And it just felt like maybe we were more comfortable collaborating with each other when we were working in that genre. I think when you're strumming your acoustic guitar and writing more of a folk or an alternative song, you feel much more intimate with the music and you don't want to share that space. But Sarah and I started to get really comfortable collaborating. So, and it's kind of funny. We've been joking that a lot of, I think, media and radio were wondering if our fans would stay loyal to us, but our fans come from that world. That's how we've made fans, is through them hearing us through other bands. And, you know, I think that we just decided that they would probably be fine with whatever we put out as long as there was integrity behind what we were doing. So,
well, we totally appreciate you being here. Thank you for enduring the world's longest sound check.
That was definitely not the world's longest sound check.
Now, the next song you guys are going to play for us is the first single from Heartthrob. It's called Closer.
Okay.
Tegan and Sarah, everyone.
All I want to know is, can you come a little closer? Here comes a breath before we get a little bit closer. Here comes a rush before we touch. Come a little closer. The doors are open, the wind is really blowing. Night sky is changing overhead. It's not just our physical. I'm the type who won't get oh so critical. So let's make things physical. I won't treat you like you're oh so typical. I won't treat you like you're oh so typical. How you think of lately? It's getting underneath me. All I dream of lately is how to get you underneath me. Here comes the heat before we meet. A little bit closer. Here comes the spark before the dark. Come a little closer. Off and the sun is finally setting. Night sky is changing overhead. It's not just our physical. I'm the type who won't get oh so critical. So let's make things physical. I won't treat you like you're all so typical.
Pacific though. I want you close, I want you. I won't treat you like you're typical. All I wanna know is, can you come a little closer?
Tegan and Sarah, everybody. Closer. Speaking of proximity and distance, well, bam, segue. One of you lives in Montreal. The other one lives like opposite end of Canada, Vancouver. Is there such a thing as too close?
I think for us, you know, thankfully we're a band making music in the time of the internet, you know. So for us, like when we first separated and Tegan was living in Vancouver and I was in Montreal, almost immediately we were both recording at home in our own studios and sending tracks back and forth to each other and sessions to each other. So our collaboration has always been fairly modern and somewhat dependent on technology and the internet. But I think because of that, it's never been a problem. Like we weren't a band where we were like jamming out in the rock space down the street from our houses or whatever. We never were that band, so we never had to sort of adjust. And it's worked really totally fine for us. I think it's allowed us to sort of explore, you know, the different kinds of songwriting that we do and the different kinds of influences that we've had. And you know, there have been times where I think Tegan has been more influenced by what was going on the West Coast and has brought me a song, and then I've brought sort of like what's happening for me in Montreal or New York, and the sort of like you know, the process of making those songs work together or those styles of work together, I think has become the signature of what our band does. You know, it's not just what Tegan does or what I do. It's sort of the compromise. There's an implication of it being somehow negative, but I think it is the compromise of what we both do that makes Tegan and Sarah sound like Tegan and Sarah.
How important is it to the writing process to sort of have a different experience? You know, if you guys just walked around and went to the same places all the time and did the same things, you'd kind of write the same sort of songs.
Is that valid? I think what you're saying is important. I think it's something that a lot of bands maybe don't take into consideration. And Sarah and I, from record to record, do change things up. I mean, I'm not so certain that it's because we live in different cities that we have different voices. I just think that we both really encourage each other to step outside the box between records, whether it's listening to different kinds of music or working with a different producer. Or in the case of Heartthrob, Sarah really encouraged me to stop being self-deprecating and self-loathing and writing these like kind of sad, depressing songs, because I'm not sad or depressed anymore. I'm happy. And so, you know, I tend to write more romantic, nostalgic songs because of that. And for Sarah, I was basically like, write Back in Your Head Again, because it was really good and it's poppy. And what I was basically saying was write something that people can really relate to. You know, Sarah has a wicked way with words where she says things in a way that feels like she's ripping your heart right out of your chest. And so we use each other that way. So I don't know if it's because we're living in different cities so much now that really gives us a different perspective on life, so much as that we just are really living independent lives from one another. So, and I think if we were living in the same city, that would still be true.
Now, you guys have started doing, you guys have been doing some co-writing, you know, with Lisa Loeb and Carly Rae Jepsen even. How is the dynamic different, you know, writing with different partners?
The thing that's really interesting about co-writing songs or working on material with other people is that often there's not that intimacy of like, you know, getting into the same room, or even sometimes, you know, like when I'm writing for somebody, I'm not even sure who it's going to be for, you know, like it's a sort of an exercise for me in just trying to sort of be universal, broad, and, you know, try to think about like other people, other characters, other situations that people might be in. So it's really fun. And, you know, like the collaborations that you've mentioned, you know, as well as what we were talking about earlier with like Tiesto and Morgan Page and David Guetta, a lot of times we're just dealing with tracks, you know, like people are sending us musical ideas and we're just sort of doing what in the industry they call top line writing.
Which means pacing around in sweatpants being like, how do I feel today?
Yeah, you know, it's very different than what we do, whereas like when I sit down to write for my own stuff, often I'm creating, you know, the instrumentals first and I'm thinking about my own situations and perspectives. So
interesting. You know, when I picture you guys writing songs, I picture like a calligraphy pen and sitting there in like a huge studio with like big vaulted ceilings.
Okay, let me paint a picture for you with my calligraphy pen. I generally do a lot of writing in my closet. It's the only sort of insulated space I have in my apartment, and it's just quite naturally it's the clothing and the folded up clothes. I put a carpet in there and some like padding, and I drag this chair in there and I squeeze in and I close the door. It's like tiny. I like close the tiny little door, and then I just sit with my computer on my knees, or sometimes I'll move some clothes and I'll put it on a shelf, and then I just sing like this with the microphone, like, and I just do my like right hand moves on the computer in my Logic program. It's the most lo-fi recording you can possibly imagine. I can write the instrumentals anywhere, but the actual writing of the songs and lyrics and melodies, it is the most not large studio with a calligraphy pen kind of experience you can possibly imagine. There's nothing glorious about it.
It's more like my picture.
Yeah, Tegan's room is like that, but my room is just, you know, dangling clothes from 2005 and sort of a smell of mildew.
Well, there are, I'm going to say 57 fantastic internet questions pouring through in text that we'll get to in just a minute here.
All 57.
First, how about another song?
Sure, we're going to play another song off the new record, and this one's called I Was a Fool.
I searched you out, how I climbed your city's walls. Do you remember me as the vow, how I prayed for your cause? I stood still, it's what I did. Love like ours has never fixed. Well, I stuck around, I didn't. I was a fool.
was a fool, Tegan and Sarah. When you go out and, you know, start performing songs from this new record, obviously, you know, there's the radio singles and that kind of thing. What songs are you most fired up to perform live? You know, you're excited to get out there and go, oh, this one's just going to kill it. I can feel it.
Well, right now, I mean, it's always really exciting to play the new stuff, even if you don't feel like you're going to kill it. Like, it's like sometimes actually the nervousness feeling and that anxiety of doing something that isn't completely muscle memory yet is totally thrilling. Because, you know, a lot of songs like Back in Your Head and, you know, The Con, like a lot of stuff that we've played, I mean, quite literally like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times, you know, there's like a totally different part of your brain that's triggered when you're doing that stuff. You know, you can, I mean, you can really engage and be really intense. And then there's other times where I'm like thinking about like my laundry or like if somebody stole my Kobo from that hotel I left it in. And like, I think there's a little bit of like a separation that happens. Whereas with the new stuff, you have to be so present and you have to be really like, you're sort of like triggering in a very like manual kind of mode. And I think that's really exciting. But then, you know, that's also really, there's a lot of anxiety associated with that too, because it's like, you're still very much, able to sort of like go off the rails really easily. Or like sometimes I'll get super nervous or I'll have like a sort of like rush of adrenaline when we're playing something new. And I, because I'm not able to sort of like manually go to the place I need to go to, I'll start forgetting lyrics or I'll think like, oh my God, I think I sang that completely wrong or out of tune, or I'll start trying to sing Tegan's part or like, you know, so it's really funny. I think it's like, it's a really
funny when she sings.
Well, it's not funny when that happens.
Nothing to do then.
That's a terrible place. It's a terrible place to go to. But I really enjoy this period of time because it's very soon it is reflex and it is muscle memory. And then that part of your brain that wants to be challenged needs something new. So
do you guys get nerves still? Like, I mean, you know, when you're standing backstage, you're like, well, I'm going out there, I'm playing new songs, you know, I'm
Yeah. I mean, God, if we stop feeling nervous, I mean, I think it's sort of like, I always think about performing and being in a band, like sort of like what it feels like to be in love, you know, like there's, you know, there's a comfort when you start to just know somebody and you've been together forever and you start looking like each other and dressing like each other. But I think the part of love that is so attractive and addictive is, you know, that firing of chemicals and not knowing what the result is going to be and what the feedback is going to be. And, you know, there are definitely nights where, you know, it's akin to the, you know, 5 years in a relationship watching Teen Mom on the couch with your partner that you don't feel like you have to shave your legs for anymore. And then there are nights where it feels like a first date, you know? Yeah, but both are good. No, but both are good. Like, it is comfortable sometimes on stage and I don't feel nervous. And then there are other nights where it's like it's the first time and it can be really thrilling. Yeah. You don't feel that way?
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree.
What? Tegan's like...
Ditto.
No, you don't have to. You don't have to share. This was just my experience.
No, I completely agree.
Yeah, I feel like you...
No, I agree. I think it's very important to feel nervous on stage. I agree with everything you said.
I mean, the guys sitting in our band don't have microphones, but just by a head nod, do you feel sometimes like that? Like some nights you're like, you just feel super comfortable and other nights you feel like you're going to poop yourself. You're so nervous.
Another question here. What interview question are you tired of answering?
We get that question a lot, so sometimes I'm like, that question. Because people, you know, have like a really awesome interview with someone and then their final question will be like, what interview, you know, question do you really hate? And you're like, well, I'm not going to be honest with you.
That means I said it already.
No, you haven't.
I will say that, you haven't. That has a lot of times doing press. I mean, there are days where like we just recently did, you know, like a 12-hour press day. I mean, we spend a lot of time talking about ourselves. And we spend a lot of time talking about ourselves in front of each other, which is really boring sometimes because I think Sarah is a wonderful, articulate, well-read, interesting person. And I've experienced a lot of what she's talking about with her. But having to hear her tell the story 900 times, you kind of zone out.
Fatiguing
is a good way to say it.
Well, it condensed into 90 seconds.
Yeah, it can be a lot. So I would say that it's not so much that there's a bad question. It's that sometimes the people asking the question, you just want to... like pause their tape recorder and be like, is this really your line of work? Do you think, like, is this, you know, cause they just seem so bored and disinterested with the questions themselves or.
Yeah.
So it's less about the questions and more about the intention behind the question. If someone seems really interested and asks me a million twin questions, I'll answer a million twin questions. If someone seems so pumped up about the production of our new record, I'll get into the nuts and bolts with them. But if they don't seem excited by their question, I feel sad. But really early on in our career, one of our first tours ever was opening for Neil Young, and the other band on the tour was the Pretenders. And this was the best education Sarah and I could have ever gotten because we were around two incredible historic bands, you know, and their crew and their management. And we were 19 years old. And so we were getting a serious education about how to behave, you know, how to be professional, how to put on a show. But one night, Chrissy Hynde was having dinner, you know, in the catering area nearby us. And Sarah and I were complaining about a terrible interview that we had done that morning. And she told a really incredible story about how you have to keep in mind that it's only your answers that are printed. So it doesn't matter how bad the question is, that if you give a bad answer, it's only you that looks bad. So you need to really always give a great answer no matter what the question is. So there's really no question. As long as someone's into us, like, that's fine.
Whatever. Yeah.
Very cool. Well, you guys played in Calgary, what was it, Friday?
Thursday and Friday.
Now, you guys grew up there. You went to high school there. Now you come back and it's like, you're sort of big time rock stars. You're kind of a big deal now. And you're playing in front of people you went to high school with.
Yeah.
You know, like the girl who saw you pee in grade two. Like,
that did not happen.
Mrs. Morgan's
no
class.
No one saw me pee.
For instance.
I was a very shy peer even from a young, early age. So I sort of had that feeling even years ago. I think actually the biggest sort of significant jump for us was around So Jealous or The Con. You know, we started to play at the Jubilee, which was where we had, you know, the beautiful theater where we'd seen, you know, plays or classical music performed live or whatever. Like, you know, this seemed like a legit joint. You know, it was the first time we weren't playing like a club or something, or like our grandparents weren't expected to like stand near the bar where the like 2-for-1 beer was going on sale or whatever. It was like the first time that I really felt like we were saying, you know, both to ourselves, but also to the people you mentioned, the kids who saw us pee in elementary school, and also our friends and family. We were sort of saying like, hey, this is not just like going to be, you know, a part-time thing, or this is really going to be like, this is our job. It's our career, you know? And I think, when we go back to Calgary, you know, it feels nice to be sort of embraced as a Calgary band and not like an embarrassment for people. You know, like sometimes you don't want to be the band that people are like, they're from here. Can you believe it? Like, so I think generally anyways, it seems like people are fairly happy to call us a hometown band, and that feels really nice. And it's good that we, you know, like we don't seem to be falling off. Like, you know, we're not going back to those bars where the 2-for-1 beer is being sold. So that's good. And I just, you know, it's just like, we're just really grateful and happy.
Well, I saw Tegan and Sarah on Jimmy Fallon the other night. And one of the things that
Jimmy Kimmel, maybe? We did
was
not play Fallon.
Yeah. I watch them both. I just PVR and watch
Jimmy,
the monologue,
other
watch
Jimmy.
The
yeah, Jimmy,
performance.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Jimmy's, both the Jimmy's probably
I
do see themselves
night,
as
a, but
yeah.
I'm like, no, I'm going to
no,
take a gamble.
You know what?
Fallon. It's 50-50. Do it, Lane. Do it.
Jimmy Fallon is really cute, but I think we were on Jimmy. Adorbs. Yeah. I mean, whatever.
One of the
Kimmel
things
guys.
I noticed,
Jimmy
I've seen
Kimmel
you guys perform a number of times. Neither of you had a guitar. You're just standing there with a microphone.
True. So you don't think that my instrument was my dancing?
Sarah does play a little. Don't you play a sample or something?
Yeah, I play a little bit of a sample.
We are
adjusting
on this new record, too. There are a few songs where we are just focused on, like, there's a couple tracks on the record, like How Come You Don't Want Me. I play a bit of keyboard, but we just both sing, and now I'm all messed up. We both just sing. I mean, that was one of our big changes for this record, was that we wanted to push our vocals and push our the sort of like back and forth between Sarah and I and harmonies and melodies to like next level. So there are some songs where we're just so busy singing that it feels almost like a disservice to the song and the vocal part to play an instrument. We also have a really awesome band. We expanded this year and hired a sixth member, so, which is John here. And, you know, he's doing a lot of the parts that we used to have to, you know, carry. And I think one of the things that we really learned, we've done a lot of sort of educating ourselves over the last couple of years, because we were wanting to push ourselves vocally, and we've been doing so much collaborating with people, that when I'm playing guitar, I'm using a whole different skill set than when I'm singing. And so when I'm doing them both together, if I didn't write it like that, sometimes I find it almost takes away from one or the other. So with the single Closer specifically that you saw on Kimmel Fallon, it's been important to me. The first time we performed Closer on TV, we did it on Conan in October, and I played electric guitar, and I felt so panicked the whole time. I didn't enjoy the performance in any way. I almost like blacked out. Right before we went on stage, I'd written down the first lyric on my hand, and I turned to Sarah, and like it was all smudged, and I was like, what is the first lyric of the song? And she turned around, and she was like, are you serious? And I was like, I'm panicking, because I was also thinking about the guitar, and I was not able to just allow myself to sing that song, which is a very difficult song to sing, and I sing every single second. There's not one moment of peace. So yeah, it's very strange.
I do think, though, that it's like, it's also about intimacy between us and the audience. I always thought that, you know, when we were performing and playing the instruments, I mean, partly it was just out of like needing to do it to fill up the sound, but also it was sort of like we were saying, these are our songs. We wrote these songs. These are our parts. These guys are doing what we did in the studio live. And it was sort of like we were saying, like, you know, it was our way. It was sort of like having a weapon. You know, it was like we were accomplished. We were not just like these, I don't know, like, I guess there was like a stigma for us, because so often the press was trying to, I guess they were sort of trying to like say that we were manufactured or that we weren't legit. And it's like, it's deeply rooted, I think, in a sexism around women and when they perform. And we wanted to prove like, hey, we're not just singers. That's what girls do. You know, we perform everything. And now I'm like, I don't care.
Now Sarah's like, I'm a girl and I'm just a singer.
I'm a woman and I've been in the industry for 13 years. And there are times where I just want to sing. Yeah. I don't want to have to think about
proving
anything.
And she does.
Anything.
She wails on a few
Yeah,
songs.
I do.
It's
and
crazy.
I also, like, when I watch video or I watch footage of us with an instrument, that's a barrier between you and the audience. It is. It's a wall. It's a protective thing. And I think for me, anyways, on a couple of the songs on this album, I wanted to remove the barrier fully. I wanted to be able to say, like,
grab the mic and you know, get down into
I mean,
that,
I'm not ready to remove that
hold
barrier.
Hold a hand and sing, like, how come you don't want me? Like,
that barrier
holding
is,
someone's hand.
That barrier is also, that's a safety place for me, you know, like, so.
So she wants to be intimate with you, but not that intimate.
Yeah, like, yeah, totally.
Well, two things. One, I'm sort of a hack guitar player singer guy, and I would find it so strange to all of a sudden take away the guitar. Like, I wouldn't know what to do with my hands. Did you guys go through that? Like, do I snap?
Oh,
do I
yeah.
cross my
well,
arms?
Well, the second performance that we did of Closer was on Letterman, and I spent that entire performance fully in my brain, but just being like, now raise your right hand. Now put your left hand up there. That's right. Now move your head. Move your shoulder.
That is
switch.
Me.
Move
I've
around,
actually felt,
yeah.
So I
now,
felt
I mean,
less
now
nervous.
I feel like a total professional. We did Ellen a couple weeks ago, and I mean, I did have strep throat and was totally stoned on, like, you know, cold and flu medication stuff, but I didn't even think once about what I was
no.
doing. So we're definitely getting
I think about karaoke a lot. I think
it.
About karaoke and I think about like the reality that besides like the first two rows, no one can see us anyway. So it's like I think I like from the very beginning was like you imagine yourself very much under a microscope as if like sometimes I will like go like this or something and I'll think like stop touching your hair. Everyone's going to wonder why you keep touching your hair. And then I'll be like, no one is wondering. Zero people have noticed you touch your hair or like zero people have noticed that your pant leg is slightly up and you didn't shave your legs for a week and there's little hairs sticking out. Like I'll start to go self-conscious into like microscopic territory and then I'm like, no, people are like making out, talking, looking at their phones, drinking beers, like vying for a better spot in the audience. No one is noticing the small inch of space between my boot and my pants.
Let's
you know?
Put it this or way. Whatever. It was a small adjustment. We kind yeah. of a few performances
we've
in,
gone
we were
through
just like,
it.
This is great. This is fine.
Yeah.
Well, you had mentioned too, like taking away the guitar sort of brings you one step closer to the audience. Was that sort of a, I guess, an intentional step forward being that this tour you're playing a lot bigger venues? You know, a lot of times you play theater shows and they're kind of intimate all on their own.
It's the album, you know, like it's like when I'm singing, you know, a song like Now I'm All Messed Up from the record, it's like I don't want to have a barrier. I want to be able to like let everything, like the emotion and the full body experience. I don't want to hide it behind an instrument.
And you want your show to,
you know, you don't
to
want
reflect
that.
Not only just the size of the room, but you know, we're now trying to fit 7 records worth of material into a set. And so it's almost like you're, you know, you have to think about, well, okay, I've played 3 songs on an acoustic guitar. Now it would be probably really good energetically for me to do something new. You know, you want to be visually exciting to the audience. If we were just sitting there completely stationary playing guitar the whole time, it might be boring. So, you know, these are all things that we think about. It's not just about intimacy. It's just about, are we visually stimulating? Is our show good? You know, people pay a lot of money and they put a lot of effort into coming to see you and you want to make sure that they get the best experience they possibly can. So Sarah will be doing a lot of trapeze work tonight in Edmonton.
Okay, one real quick question before we get to a final song. What's the weirdest thing a fan's ever given you?
Oh my God, so much weird stuff.
Yeah.
We get so much, I mean, but neat stuff. I keep some of the really crazy, there's like this guy who made like figurines of Sarah and I and like he's done different eras. And I have all those at home. I don't have them out because I would kind of be weird, I think, probably, if they were on display.
Action figures.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, someone made us shoes, like to scale. Like, actually made us, like, size 7 shoes, like, replicas of our other shoes out of masking tape. Duct tape, sorry. And they, like, fit. Like, I could put them on and wear them if I wanted to, but I would never do that. Not even around the house by myself.
Once. You really see, like, the craftiness of people. Like, it's, like,
amazing.
I think in a way, like, you become sort of a muse for somebody, and then they sort of use their medium, whatever it is. Like, a lot. We obviously get a lot of drawings, paintings, illustrations, which is... It's so sweet. But yeah, as Tegan said, then there are some people who are just sort of like veering way far into craft land and they're like
next level
masking tape artists, if you will. Yeah. Yeah.
Someone made us like a Monopoly game where all the pieces on the board were band members and all the different things on the board were like things from our childhood. I mean, it's borderline a little nuts, right? But it's good. It's good.
It's cute.
It's nice, you know, and we really appreciate it. So. Yeah. Really
anyway, before we get to that last song, I'm just going to give you the underwear I made.
Oh, yeah totally. Yeah.
An underwear artist, yeah.
The Lane Mitchell Show podcast presents another live Sonic session performance.
sensitive. It's true. Alligator tears cried over you. Over you, over you. Over you, over you. Run around on me. I'd sooner die without. Run around on me. Die without. My motor mouth, it runs over you. Over you, over you. Over you, over you. Run around on me, I'd sooner die without. Run around on me, I'd die without. Won't make a scene. Oh, over you. Over you, over you. Over you, over you. Run around on me. I'd sooner die without. Run around on me. I'd die without. I'd sooner die without. Run around on me. I'd die without. Run around on me. I'd sooner die without. Run around on me. I'd die without. Over you. 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 Over you.
Hear more of this interview and other off-air highlights at lanemitchell.com. Your gateway to exclusive interviews and other modern rocky goodness from Sonic 1029.com.